This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at the Newseum, a museum devoted to journalism and news on the National Mall here in Washington, D.C. Yesterday, for the third time in this campaign, Senator Barack Obama stood poised to knock out Senator Hillary Clinton and lock up the Democratic presidential nomination. And yesterday, in Pennsylvania, Senator Clinton scored a third crucial and convincing victory. Senator Obama's narrow lead in both the popular vote and the delegate count narrowed a bit more. And while it's still unlikely that Senator Clinton can overtake him in either category, it now appears that the attacks and responses will continue until all the voting is over in June. Up next, in 2 weeks' time, come Indiana and North Carolina. Today, we'll look back at what happened yesterday and ahead to where the Democratic presidential campaign goes from here. With us here at the museum is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. We'll hear from spokesmen from the Clinton and Obama camps and from experts on the political battlegrounds in Indiana and North Carolina. And we want to hear from you. Is this long campaign too divisive? How should superdelegates make their decision? And we'd especially like to hear from listeners in Indiana and North Carolina. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Ken Rudin begins with a trivia question.
Well, since we're talking about Pennsylvania, of course, only one president has ever come from Pennsylvania. That was James Buchanan. Dan Shore covered that campaign in 1956.
Yes.
But who was the last presidential candidate to have been born in Pennsylvania?
If you think you know the name of the last presidential candidate to have been born in the state of Pennsylvania, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email again, talk@npr.org. And, of course, we'll take guesses from the members of the studio audience here at the museum. But, Ken, getting back to the results yesterday in Pennsylvania, the final margin of victory for Hillary Clinton backed just off a bit from the 10 points that she sustained most of the evening last night to 9 points. Is there any great significance to 1 point here?
Well, a lot of it is expectations game. And, of course, in your earlier argument that Hillary Clinton was about to get knocked out, could have been knocked out 3 times earlier, I question whether that really was the case. A lot of people said that had she lost New Hampshire, she was gone. Had she lost in Ohio and Texas on March 4th, she would be gone. Had she lost, of course, in Pennsylvania yesterday, she'd be gone. Ultimately, the name of the game is 2025 delegates. Hillary Clinton argues that it's still like the seventh inning. Neither candidate has enough delegates to go over the top. And so she's in it to the end. She obviously, the end could be in 2 weeks in Indiana and North Carolina first of all, North Carolina is one state that Barack Obama looks to have a sizable lead. And if she loses Indiana, then the same expectation game will be played. If she can't win in Indiana, is it time for her to get out? But she insists that's absolutely not the case. She's in it to the end.
And what about the delegate count itself? How did she fare yesterday in Pennsylvania?
She picked up, they're still counting, and there's, of course, not only is it statewide proportional, but it's also individual by individual districts. So we're still counting, but prior to yesterday in Pennsylvania, Hillary Clinton was trailing Barack Obama by about 138 delegates. That includes pledged and superdelegates. And it looks like she picked up about a net of 15 thus far. So maybe perhaps it's about 125. But again, we expect that Barack Obama will pick up more delegates in upcoming states like Indiana, like Montana, like South Dakota, like states like that. So ultimately, when all is said and done on June 3rd, even with an impressive 9.5-point victory yesterday in Pennsylvania, it's hard to make the case that she could surpass him either in popular votes, which she now trails by 500,000, or delegates.
And what about the message she hoped to send to superdelegates yesterday? This lead, the front runner, is vulnerable. He can be beaten in November. I'm the woman who can carry the Democratic Party to victory.
Well, if you're a Democratic regular who thinks that ultimately Barack Obama will be the nominee, there are some concerning things that came up that we saw in Pennsylvania, that his inability to win among blue-collar, working-class white voters, the so-called Reagan Democrats. We saw once again in Pennsylvania that Hillary Clinton did better with older voters, with female voters, with less educated voters, and those earning less money. So these are obviously a big part of the coalition that Barack Obama will have to win come if he's going to defeat John McCain in November.
NPR political editor Ken Rudin with us here at the museum. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Don't forget our trivia question. What was the name of the last presidential candidate to have been born in the state of Pennsylvania? But let's get a caller on the line. And this is Leanne. Leanne with us from Lakewood in Colorado. Hello. Leanne, are you there?
Yeah, this is Tom in Sioux Falls.
Ah, well, okay, Thomas in Sioux Falls. You're doing a great job disguising your voice, Leanne. Go ahead, please.
Was it Nixon?
Richard Nixon. Was Richard Nixon the last Republican presidential, presidential candidate to be born in Pennsylvania?
I know he was born in Whittier, California, but so it was not Richard Nixon.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Leanne. Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Chris, and Chris is calling us from Jacksonville in Florida.
Hey, is the answer Ron Paul?
Boy, you weren't supposed to get that quickly. That's correct. You know, a lot of people, there were a lot of presidential candidates who served in office from Pennsylvania, like Milton Schaap, who ran for president, Arlen Specter, who ran for president, but neither of which, William Scranton even, but none of them was born in Pennsylvania. Ron Paul was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
So, Chris, thanks very much. You win the no prize. Let's see if we can get, I think Leanne is on this other button, which I probably pushed the wrong one. Leanne, are you there?
I'm here, Neil. Thank you.
Oh, go ahead with your question, please.
I'd like to know what the delegate count would be, the total delegates, if the Florida and Michigan delegates were counted and apportioned according to the votes in those states.
How would that change things? Of course, Florida and Michigan moved their primaries up in violation of party rules. The party then stripped them of their delegates, and their votes don't count at this point anyway. Ken?
Right, but with the pressure on Senator Clinton to drop out of the race and people saying, well, you know, more people are interested in seeing Senator Obama as the candidate, I'm interested to know what it would have been had people who voted in those states counted.
Well, first of all, it's important to point out that in neither state did the candidates campaign. The candidates, as a matter of fact, in Michigan, only Hillary Clinton's name was on the ballot. I think Chris Dodd
and Dennis Kucinich.
Barack Obama's name was not on the Michigan ballot. All the candidates' names were on the Florida ballot, but again, candidates did not compete in either state. So you can make the case that, yes, if you include Hillary Clinton's numbers in Michigan and Florida, perhaps she wipes out the popular vote difference between herself and Barack Obama, but most people say that it doesn't count because, one, Hillary Clinton herself said back then that, look, we know this is a meaningless exercise, that it won't count, but now the fact that she's trailing in delegates, trailing in popular votes, the Clinton campaign is trying to make the case that these votes should count. After all, it's not the voters' fault that the DNC and the party in the two states had their squabble.
Right, and I'm thinking about it being a negotiation at this point, and if you're going to negotiate, then you ought to include the people who were voting. So thank you so much.
Thanks very much for the call, Leanne.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And joining us now is Hillary Clinton's communications director, Howard Wolfson. He's on the line from Arlington, Virginia. Very good of you to join us today.
Pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And we heard today Senator Clinton say, you know, more people have now voted for me than have voted for my opponent. In fact, I now have more votes than anybody's ever had in a primary contest for a nomination. How do you arrive at those numbers?
Well, if you go to the ABC News website, they will show you how they derived at the same set of figures. AP has a similar set of numbers. We add up all of the votes that we've received in all of the contests, and we add up all of the votes that Senator Obama has received in these contests, and lo and behold, we have more votes than he does. Now, that margin does include Florida and Michigan. 2.5 million people came out in those elections. I think 2.5 million people coming out, a record turnout in Florida, enormous turnout in Michigan, should count. Those people should count. Obviously, the party is figuring out what to do about apportioning the delegates, but to say that 2.5 million people coming out to vote shouldn't count in an overall tally, I think belies the fact that so many people were engaged and interested in participating in our democracy. So this is something that I think superdelegates will take into account when making their ultimate decisions. It won't be the only thing, but it's certainly an important thing.
And you will understand if others in the Democratic Party disagree with your vote tally.
Well, I think a Democrat, frankly, has a very hard case to make that 2.5 million people coming out and voting shouldn't count. I mean, what's the argument that these states had elections, enormous turnout, and they shouldn't count? I mean, we should pretend that it didn't happen, that 2.5 million people didn't have their preferences expressed. I think that's a terrible and very difficult argument to make for a Democrat. We're the party of counting every vote, and so I know that Senator Obama and his supporters may choose to make that argument, but I think people looking at it objectively will understand that regardless of how the ultimate delegate disposition is resolved with regard to Florida and Michigan, people who came out and voted shouldn't be punished for the fact that the DNC and the state parties haven't quite figured out how to get the delegates counted.
Ken?
Howard, two things. First of all, in 2000, the argument was not that Al Gore had more votes, but you get elected by getting 270 electoral votes, and George W. Bush had that. So it's one argument to make that you had more votes, but obviously Al Gore was not president. But more importantly, in Michigan, when the DNC and the early states said, look, don't campaign this state, all the candidates chose to take their name off the ballot except Hillary Clinton. Do you consider Michigan a fair contest, a legitimate contest?
Well, just a couple of points of correction, if I could. One, not every candidate took their name off the ballot in Michigan.
Chris Dodd, Dennis Kucinich, right.
Lift is right. So there were other people who made different choices. Two, the DNC didn't tell candidates not to campaign in Michigan. There was a pledge that candidates signed on their own that the state chairs from Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina and Nevada offered for them not to campaign. So that was not a DNC rule. Frankly, despite the fact that people did not campaign in Michigan, they had an enormous turnout. Now, I could understand if we were talking about an election that nobody came out, there was no interest, nobody knew about these candidates, but that was not the case at all. You had record turnout in Florida, and you had significant turnout in Michigan. So Senator Obama, I think at that point, knew that if he had kept his name on the ballot, he would have done poorly. He made an affirmative decision to take his name off the ballot because, frankly, I don't think he wanted to lose Michigan with his name on the ballot. Well, that was his decision. But we're not going to penalize people who actually came out to participate in our democracy. What a terrible message that would send to people who wonder whether their votes are counted or whether their votes matter.
Howard Wolfson, thanks very much for being with us, and congratulations on your victory yesterday.
Thank you.
Howard Wolfson, Communications Director for Hillary Clinton. He joined us by phone from Arlington in Virginia. When we come back, we'll hear from Senator Barack Obama's campaign manager and some of those same questions. Stay with us. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.
WILL programs are supported by DEX. DEX is a complete, up-to-date source for information in the book, on CD-ROM, or online at DEXKNOWS.com.
Hi, I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser, inviting you to tune in to Your Weather tonight at 9:58 on WILL-TV. We've expanded the weather coverage to 7 nights a week. Now you can join us every night at 9:58 on WILL-TV, PBS for Central Illinois.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting live from the Knight Studio inside the museum in Washington, D.C. Hillary Clinton scored her must-win in Pennsylvania yesterday, but the next showdowns in the increasingly vitriolic contest for the Democratic nomination are right around the corner, May 6th, in Indiana and North Carolina. We're here with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, and we want to hear from you, too. How are you feeling about this long and hard-fought campaign? We'd especially like to hear from listeners in North Carolina and Indiana. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We'll also take questions from the audience here at the museum. With us now on the phone from Chicago is Barack Obama's campaign manager, David Plouffe. And nice to talk to you again.
Nice to be with you.
And I know your loss yesterday must be a bit of a disappointment. The campaign did go all out and spent a lot of time and money in Pennsylvania. And the third time, people have noticed that Senator Obama has failed to deliver the knockout blow.
Well, listen, we started over 20 points behind in Pennsylvania. And we've always viewed this entire contest as a body of, you know, 50 states and a battle for delegates. And if you look, we have 9 contests left, and we're going to fight as hard as we can in each of them. Some of them will probably win. Some of them Senator Clinton may win. But we believe at the end of the day we will have won. We've won twice as many states as Senator Clinton, have a very meaningful delegate lead, and we're going to continue to fight as hard as we can, starting in Guam on May the 3rd and Indiana and North Carolina on May the 6th.
As you know, we were just on the phone with Howard Wolfson, the communications director for Senator Clinton, and he said that by their calculations, including Florida and Michigan, Senator Clinton now has more popular votes than Senator Obama.
Well, I'd say a couple things about that. Popular vote is a Clinton metric. It's not the metric by which this nomination should be judged. Our strategy and the Clinton strategy was based on the acquisition of delegates. Now that retaking the pledged delegate lead is close to impossible for the Clinton campaign, they want to move to a different direction. Just by example, if this was about popular vote, we would have campaigned for 10 straight days in California before February 5th rather than trying to travel to 15 or 16 states and accumulate delegates. We would have campaigned harder in our own state of Illinois to try and drive up our number. That's not a reflection of these contests or the strategy either campaign took. And the truth is, the Florida and Michigan popular vote, we did not campaign in either state. We were not on the ballot in Michigan. And I think if you talk to superdelegates, they do not believe that the Florida and Michigan contests should be part of the calculation here. We hope that Florida and Michigan get seated in Denver, and if we're the nominee, they certainly will, and we are talking to both states to try and reach a settlement that works for all parties. But the truth is, this is a race for delegates. The Clinton campaign themselves were very consistent in that belief, and we now are only 293 delegates away from securing the nomination, and so that's the number we're focused on. We can see in our sights getting to the magic number, and clinching out this nomination as soon as we can.
Senator Clinton has called for another round of debates before the Indiana and North Carolina primaries, since everything is so close. There was a debate scheduled in North Carolina, a CBS debate, and Senator Obama apparently scheduling conflicts unavailable for that. Would the campaign agree to other debates if dates are available?
Well, we've done 21 debates, including four one-on-one debates, and we actually agreed to a North Carolina debate that would have occurred before Pennsylvania that Senator Clinton declined. And, you know, there's only 13 days now, so we want to spend as much time as we can in both of these states talking to the voters and taking questions, and we'll evaluate debates in the coming days here. But our most important priority right now is spending a lot of time on the ground in these states.
David, there are some people who make the argument that the real winner yesterday was John McCain, and that the fact that the fight for the Democratic nomination still goes on, that Clinton and Obama are still beating each other up. And while Hillary Clinton, some polls showed that her, you know, the voters' feelings about trustworthiness and honesty have taken a hit, Barack Obama's numbers have taken a hit also, in addition to his inability to perhaps capture blue-collar workers. But the quandary, it seems to me, that your campaign is in is that if you don't respond to negative attacks, then Hillary Clinton could say, well, he can't take the heat and the Republicans will beat him up in November. But if you do respond in kind, then you almost lose the argument that you're above the old-line politics that he's been criticizing Hillary Clinton for. There's a question there somewhere. I'm not sure where the question is, but...
Well, I'll try and process it. Well, I'd say, you know, Senator Clinton has no doubt run a much more negative campaign. The New York Times editorialized very strongly about that today. And in state after state, even state she wins, voters think she's running a much more negative campaign. So we've obviously had to respond and counterpunch, and I think we've done that effectively and shown Democrats who are looking to the fall, that we are not going to sit back and allow swift voting to occur. I do think that there's some benefits to how long this is going on. Both campaigns just built good operations in Pennsylvania, and we certainly got to be known a lot better by voters there. We're going to do the same thing in North Carolina, in Oregon, and Montana. So there's some benefit to it. And I think in terms of the general election, there's a lot of focus on electability. I mean, if you look at most of the public polls in Pennsylvania, the Clinton and Obama performance against McCain are about the same. The question is, when you look at states like Wisconsin and Iowa and Minnesota and Colorado and New Mexico and Nevada and Washington and Oregon, all states you either have to win or make very close, Senator Clinton is very deficient compared to our performance. We beat John McCain in almost all of those states, and in some cases we perform 10, 12 points better than Senator Clinton. So for voters or superdelegates concerned about electability, I mean, you can't look at the Pennsylvania primary. I mean, let's remember, in 1980, Ted Kennedy and George Bush won the Pennsylvania primary, the two candidates that didn't even win their nomination. So most of the people who voted for Senator Clinton yesterday are going to vote for us in the general election. Most of the people that voted for us who are Democrats would probably vote for her if she were the nominee. There's raw feelings now. The party will come together. The question is, who can get enough support amongst independent voters against John McCain, who has real appeal with independent voters? We do not believe Senator Clinton has the ability to be as competitive with John McCain as she needs to be with independent voters or moderate Republicans.
David Plouffe, thanks for your time.
Thanks. Have a good afternoon.
You too. David Plouffe, the campaign manager for Barack Obama, joining us on the phone from Chicago. We have this email from Stephen, a correction on the trivia question. Joe Biden was also born in Pennsylvania, he writes, unless you're counting only Ron Paul, because Biden dropped out sooner. Still, I think that's worth a mention.
It certainly is.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to Carol. And Carol's calling us from Delaware.
Yes, I just had a comment and a question. My comment is, if the Clinton campaign was so concerned about the delegate count for Florida and Michigan, why didn't they say something prior to those races being run? And I really think that comes back to Howard Dean and how he has poorly run the DNC to me. But my question is, how do you think the poorly moderated debate impacted the Pennsylvania outcome?
This was the ABC debate with George Stephanopoulos.
Yes.
And Ken Rudin, this was a debate where I guess the first, half hour, 45 minutes were devoted to questions about Senator Obama.
And there's been tremendous angst on the blogosphere about the kind of questions that Charlie Gibson and George Stephanopoulos asked. Some part of me thinks that there was a little gang up on Barack Obama. Some of it was kind of like trivial questions like why he doesn't wear a flag pin, and I think many voters around the country rolled their eyes at such a question. But don't underestimate, or as George W. Bush would say, misunderestimate, the American people and the American voters who would say things like, remember 1988 when Michael Dukakis was hit hard and hit hard often over his role in the Pledge of Allegiance in Massachusetts. Now, it seemed like such a trivial matter, an issue at the time, but the Republicans hit and hit and hit. And again, it was part of the perception of Michael Dukakis, that and the waving from the tank.
Yeah.
So I think those kind of things hurt. But having said that, I also think that Barack Obama didn't do himself much good in the comment about the bitter voters who cling to religion and guns. There may be some truth to that at all, but as well, but you almost don't want to be truthful when you're trying to run for president. And so so basically, I don't think Barack Obama did himself much good, but I think I agree with a lot of people who thought that Stephanopoulos and Gibson went overboard with kind of trivial kind of questions.
Thanks for the call, Carol.
Thank you.
And let's get a question from here at the audience in the museum.
My name is Hillary from Bethesda, Maryland. Do you think it will be taken into account the fact that Hillary Clinton has won more states, large states with large electoral college representation if there's a deadlock, and will that influence the superdelegates, do you think?
Yes, Ken Rudin, of course, Hillary Clinton's argument is, look, New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, California, these big states, Michigan, Florida, too, where a Democrat, if they hope to get elected president, you're going to need to win those states.
Well, the Barack Obama people will argue that there's no way that the Democrats are going to lose states like New York, California, but they do have an argument in the fact that Pennsylvania, with a lot of blue-collar white voters, low-income voters, who voted for Ronald Reagan in 1980 and 1984 could desert the Democratic cause if they feel the Democratic nominee isn't sufficiently speaking their language and speaking what they want to say. But you could also make the case that Hillary Clinton may have the problems with these same voters in Florida, in New Jersey, in Michigan, states where either the Democratic message isn't resonating or whatnot. But I think the argument is, Barack Obama's argument is that, look, the big states, the ones that she has won, the Democrats will win. His argument is that those other states, the Missouris of the world, where are up for grabs, the Iowas of the world, the New Mexicos of the world, that's where they may make the case against John McCain.
Thank you. Let's get another caller in. This is Elizabeth. Elizabeth calling us from Fort Wayne in Indiana.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Following the primary yesterday, I was just wondering if your panelists had a comment about some of the voters indicated that race was a factor those who had voted for Clinton, and I wondered if, you know, I believe the figure was something like 20%, and I wondered if your panelists felt that actually the figure might be higher, and is it a concern going into the remaining primaries?
Ken Rudin?
Yeah, once upon a time, Barack Obama was trying to sell himself as somebody who transcended race. That disappeared after South Carolina when the racial question and the issue really came to the forefront. But polls do show that among Hillary Clinton supporters, as many as 30% have said that if Barack Obama is the nominee, they would consider bolting to John McCain. We don't know if that's a race thing or whatever it is, but it's still out there, whereas far fewer, perhaps 15 to 18% of Obama supporters would desert or stay home if Hillary Clinton were the nominee. We don't know specifically if it's race-based, but it's obviously a concern.
Well, 90% of the African-American vote went for Senator Obama, and one presumes that at least a significant portion of that was also race-based.
That's true, but I suspect that if Hillary Clinton, any Democrat who's a nominee, 90% of the African-American support will go to that Democratic nominee. The question is whether, if Hillary Clinton does win this nomination, despite the fact that Obama may have more delegates at one point or more popular votes, do African-Americans feel a bitterness, a betrayal, and stay home?
Thanks very much for the question, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
We're at the Newseum for an NPR News special with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to an election special from NPR News. And let's go to our next guest now. And Hoosiers also go to the polls on May 2nd. Whoops, that's the wrong guest. Let's go ahead to one of the primaries coming up in 2 weeks. Voters in North Carolina go to the polls on May 6th. Joining us to talk about what to look for in the Tar Heel State is Laura Leslie, Capital Bureau Chief of the North Carolina Public Radio, with us here at the Knight Studio at the Newseum. And thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
And right now, the polls show Senator Obama with a substantial lead. Any reason to question that?
There's no reason at all. It's been a very stable lead for weeks and weeks. He's held up 9 to 10 points, depending on who you're talking to. And that hasn't changed much with any of the things that have happened between the debates and Super Tuesday. It seems like a very strong operation there and a great deal of excitement and enthusiasm on the ground. So I don't see that changing anytime soon.
And similar to a lot of the other contests that we've seen this year, record turnouts?
Actually, record turnouts, even for early voting. Our early voting is, I think, six times what it was in our last primary. And a lot of that, when you look at it county by county, the folks who are coming in to vote early and register are the folks who are in the college communities, actually, the younger voters. So there's a lot of excitement on the campuses. We got a lot of campuses. So it's a pretty exciting time.
Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is Linda. Linda calling us from North Carolina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. One of the things that I haven't seen except written up in Time magazine many months ago was the fact that Hillary Clinton was in the very beginning of the baby boom generation. She was on the leading edge, the bra burners and the, you know, the big exhibitors that went out and demonstrated. And they were the ones that broke the glass ceiling so that kids, girls could go, for example, to an engineering school instead of being the only girl in the class and fighting to get in there. When I came along as a middle baby boomer, there were already five other girls there. So she's used to fighting fights, and I think that's why a lot of the working middle-class people in Pennsylvania voted for, because they are really used to having to fight for everything they get. What they haven't seen and what Obama has not stressed is that he represents the fruit of all their labor, that these are folks that understand you have to be willing to talk to other people, you have to, instead of being polarizing, you have to respect each other, and together you come together to make decisions and to solve problems such as the global warming.
Well,
any comment?
Ken Rudin, I guess that goes to you. If you're looking at the demographics of the race, every voter who is older, well, Hillary Clinton wins among older voters. If you go among younger voters, Barack Obama does very well.
Right, and I was interested in the part of the question where this talked about polarizing, and yet poll after poll after poll will show that it's been Barack Obama from the beginning who tried to get past, move beyond the politics as usual of Washington, the kind of Washington talk that we see for so many years, whereas Hillary Clinton's numbers, she did win a very impressive victory. It's about 9.2% is the latest numbers I've saw in Pennsylvania, but at what cost? And the question is whether that the polarization, the winning at whatever it takes to win, will doom the Democratic ticket in November.
Thanks very much for the call.
Well, I think she's very old school, and I think Obama is actually very new school, but he's got to stress that more.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks,
Linda. Here's an email question from Laura, and this goes to Laura. How does race play in this southern state?
Well, about 22% of our registered voters are African American, and Obama holds a very strong lead among those voters, as you can imagine. But I think, especially in North Carolina, with its, you know, its troubled racial past, there's a great desire to get past race. And so, you know, you talk about Obama being the post-race candidate. That's a message that's playing very well, I think, in North Carolina. Our recent polls that we had, there was an Elon poll that showed most voters, of course, say they wouldn't be influenced by race, but almost, I think, 3 out of 4 said they knew someone who would. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it'll be very interesting to see what happens, whether this is another Harvey Gantz, you know, setup where people say they're going to vote and then don't. But I just don't feel that.
All right. Stay with us, if you would, Laura. And Ken Rudin, you can stay, too. Coming up, we'll also focus on the primary ahead in Indiana. If you're in North Carolina and Indiana, give us a call, 800-989-8255, or zap us an email, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan, and this is an NPR News Special.
Support for NPR comes from Fiji Water, working to give back to the environment with every bottle. Learn more at FijiGreen.com. That's FijiGreen.com. From Walden University, graduate degrees online for professionals who strive to make a difference. Walden University. A higher degree, a higher purpose. WaldenU.edu. And from Raymond James, independent financial planning advice, asset management, and investment banking. Individual solutions from independent advisors. RaymondJames.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
WILL programming is made possible by Tires Plus Total Car Care, located at Prospect and Market View in Champaign. Tires Plus provides complete car repair and maintenance. More information is available at 366-3201.
Carry AM 580 News with you. The AM 580 News Daily Podcast is updated every weekday morning with the latest news, an in-depth feature, and a look at the day's forecast from the WILL weather staff. Update your MP3 player every day, and you have AM 580's news coverage to hear at your leisure. Subscribe at WILL.UIUC.edu. The AM 580 News Daily Podcast, another service of WILL Urbana.
WILL programming is made possible by the University of Illinois College of Law, hosting A Debtor World, interdisciplinary academic symposium on debt, focusing on the debt crisis on May 2nd and 3rd in cooperation with the American Bankruptcy Institute. More information is available at www.law.uiuc.edu.
This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, broadcasting live from the new museum in Washington, D.C., in the Knight Studio. And here are the headlines from some of the stories we're following today at NPR News. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates says President Bush will nominate Army General David Petraeus, who's led the troops in Iraq for the past year, to be the next commander of U.S. Central Command. Gates says he expects General Petraeus to make the shift in late summer or early fall. And U.S. rice futures rose to an all-time high today because of worries about supply shortages. Costco and Sam's Club are placing limits on the number of bags of rice customers can buy. Details on those stories and more coming up later today on All Things Considered. We're at the museum today to remember what happened yesterday in Pennsylvania and now to look ahead at North Carolina and Indiana. Those primaries come up in 2 weeks. Our guests here are Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. Also with us, Laura Leslie, the Capitol Bureau Chief of North Carolina Public Radio. And joining us now is Brian Howie. He publishes the independent newsletter Howie Politics Indiana at howiepolitics.com. And he joins us from the studios of radio station WFBQ in Indianapolis. And nice to have you on the program today.
And Neil.
All right. Thanks very much. And I want to begin with this email. Jane in Raleigh, North Carolina wrote to ask, why is Indiana more important than North Carolina now?
Well, we're the last swing state. If you look at the remaining states here, one or the other candidates are favored in just about every other state. You know, obviously, Obama was favored in Pennsylvania or North Carolina. Here in Indiana, we've got a real close race. We've had a couple of recent polls that show Obama with a very slim lead, about 5%. Both campaigns are telling us that they think that this is within the margin of error, and I think we're going to have a real duke-out slug-out here in the next 2 weeks.
And a lot of people say the demographics in Indiana not all that dissimilar from Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Very true, and I think we're going to see the Clinton campaign, you know, exercise their Ohio River Valley strategy. When she won Ohio, she declared that the nomination was going to be won or lost in the Ohio Valley. Obviously, that begins in Pennsylvania, and we've seen them be very active in Lawrenceburg, the New Albany, Jeffersonville area, down in Evansville, and so that's really going to be in play, and I think that's part of their strategy. They want to win southern Indiana, and I think that was another reason why we saw Barack Obama in Evansville last night.
I know you were at that rally where Senator Obama made, his concession speech. Sounded an awful lot like a stump speech, too. But what was the atmosphere there like in Evansville last night?
Well, there was some concern. The local paper had run a story wondering whether they could get enough people to fill the house. It's a Robert Stadium is a 12,000-seat venue. Ended up about 8,000 people, and the people were mesmerized. They wrapped around the building. They waited for 2 hours for the candidate to show up. John Cougar Mellencamp came in and sang Small Town, which is kind of ironic given the whole bitter remark and everything. And then when the candidate took the stage, they were leaning into every word, and this was a crowd that was black, white, young, old. Republicans were there, a lot of independents, and there's the difference between Indiana and maybe Pennsylvania, the fact that independents and Republicans can vote in this primary, and so it's a little bit different slate than what we saw in Pennsylvania when only Democrats could vote.
Laura Leslie, what's the situation in the state of North Carolina? Just to say that Senator Obama does particularly well in primaries that are open primaries, where independents can cross over and vote for the Democratic or Republican candidate.
We have a sort of a semi-close, where you can vote on either ticket if you're unaffiliated. If you're a registered Republican, you can't actually vote on a Democratic ticket. But that does leave about 3.8 million voters that can vote in the Democratic primary. So, and that's a substantial number, obviously. And we've seen a huge jump in registrations of the first 4 months of this year in the Democrats and the unaffiliated. Republicans only up in single digits.
Here's an email question from Christine in Charlotte, North Carolina. There's a huge body of wealthy young 30-something professionals, black and white, in the Charlotte area, she writes. Senator Clinton will have to address not only this community, but also the rest of the state comprised of service workers and just plain down-home folk. Oh, there is the Raleigh community of educated people employed by the Research Triangle Park facilities. In essence, this is a diverse state that the polls will have difficulty predicting. Do you agree with her?
I do, actually. I mean, you know, we like to joke in North Carolina that we're the only state that sent Jesse Helms and John Edwards to the Senate at the same time. So we're a little schizophrenic politically. And our polls are tough. You know, we're a quickly growing state and a huge difference between sort of the psychosocial whatever of the metro areas and then the large rural and agricultural communities that still make up the bulk of the state. It's going to be a tough one to call.
Let's go to a caller, and this is Masoudi. Masoudi in North Carolina. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Oh, it is Masoud.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah. I'm going to vote for Hillary. She is most experienced, what I feel. And I don't know why Democrats are forgetting the most important point, that we are competing against McCain. Not like, okay, Hillary is more important than Obama, or Obama is more important than Hillary. So the most important is, who is the one who can beat McCain? And I think it's Hillary Clinton.
All right. Let's take a look at that. Quickly, Laura Leslie, do you think that the Democratic candidate, whoever it is going to be able to carry North Carolina come November?
There's a lot of discussion about that every year. We say this is going to be the one to swing it. But they actually do. A lot of Democratic leaders have come out and endorsed Obama in the last few days. And one of the reasons is because they actually do believe that his coattails would be long enough to carry that ticket over to blue. Now, whether or not that's realistic, I don't know. But the excitement on the ground right now is such that Democratic leaders are hoping they can capitalize off that. And the person they see making that happen is Obama.
Brian Howie, as the candidates look ahead to November, is Indiana a state that's in play for the Democrats?
Well, the former Congressman Tim Romer, who served on the 911 Commission, says that Indiana has the potential to become a purple state, obviously a red state that turns blue. I would say that the odds against that are fairly good. Indiana has not elected a Democrat since 1964. But having said that, we've had a lot of change in this state over the last three or four election cycles. We've thrown out an incumbent governor. We've defeated the Senate president, the Senate finance chairman. We've had four members of Congress that have lost their seats. We had 40% of our mayors that were defeated for re-election this past year, and the Indiana House has changed hands. So Hoosiers are showing kind of a new streak here of change, and I think they're going to keep an open mind. When you're paying $4 a gallon of gas and $100 for two bags of groceries, that kind of hits the dining room table.
Let's get a question from here in the studio audience at the museum.
Hi, thank you. My name is Barbara Stone. I live here in Washington, D.C., but have most recently moved from North Carolina. My question is, I'm interested in knowing what the role of John Edwards and his role and what he's playing in North Carolina.
Laura?
Sure. He hasn't come out and endorsed yet stood behind anybody, and we're kind of thinking he'll wait until the convention. He may be one of the folks behind the scenes who helps to sort out the whole Obama-Clinton dispute. In the meantime, though, some folks who are sort of key backers, for example, Ed Turlington, his former campaign chief, came out today in favor of Obama and was kind of big news in North Carolina. So, you see Edwards talking to people, but you don't hear him coming out just yet to make an endorsement.
Laura, let me follow up. There's a news report out today that says the Republican Party in North Carolina is going to launch a television ad calling Barack Obama too extreme for the state. The Republican Party has money to burn on advertising in the Democratic primary?
No, not really. What's interesting is that after our state GOP announced that they were going to run this ad, which, if you remember, the notorious footage of the Reverend Wright making some statements about after 9/11, that's what the ad consists of. The National, the RNC, and John McCain's campaign emailed and asked them not to run it, and it looks like our state is going to move ahead with that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
So they're
going to
run it anyway?
Apparently so. I mean, they have. It doesn't start till Monday, and they haven't actually, quote, finalized the buy, unquote. So I suppose there's still time for them to back down.
But. Ken?
And while we could talk about what a despicable ad that might be for the Republicans, Hillary Clinton is also running an ad that talks about Pearl Harbor, 9/11, and Osama bin Laden. And if there's any question about what the point she's trying to make in that ad, I think that's pretty clear.
But is this the kind of ad, maybe not from the John McCain campaign, not from the Republican National Committee, but maybe from the 527 groups, those independent groups, that maybe we can expect come the fall?
Oh, well, there's no question. Matter of fact, John McCain, even if Republicans are not giving to his campaign and he's being vastly outspent and outraised by both Clinton and Obama, the state parties, the RNC, the Republican National Committee, all 50 state parties are still, whatever they like McCain or not, they still do not like Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. You can see a lot of those ads by state parties.
Let's get another caller on the line and another Leanne, this one calling from Birmingham in Alabama.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I had a comment about the fear of what's going to happen to the Democratic Party in November and, the statistics about Obama supporters supporting McCain in November if the nomination went to Hillary and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked really closely with the campaign here in Birmingham for about a year now, and there are a lot of people associated with the Obama campaign here that have said they wouldn't vote for Hillary if she got the nomination. But I think in the end, when it came down to it, they would. I think that they would support whatever Democrat got the nomination. But myself, as a moderate Republican who has supported Barack, I think that group of voters, myself included, would vote for McCain come November.
I wonder, no matter who the Democratic nominee is, do you think the Alabama is in play? This is a solidly Republican state.
It is, actually. We're fighting an uphill battle here, but we're trying. We have hope. Our goal is to try to register a lot of new voters between now and November.
Okay.
To try to change our numbers. I still don't know whether we'll be in play, but we've had a good time working on the campaign here regardless.
Ultimately, I think that in November the argument, the issue is going to be the war, the economy, gasoline prices,
right.
The last 8 years of George W. Bush, and I suspect that the Democratic Party will unite. But it's clear, and history has shown this, that the longer fight for the nomination goes on, we saw this with Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter in 1980 on the Democratic mm-hmm. side, Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford on the Republican side in 76. The longer a fight goes on, the more bitter the contest, those bitter feelings can resonate into November.
Well, I think that there is a threat of that, but hopefully we'll be able to wrap up the nomination in the next couple weeks, and we won't have to worry about that.
Maybe. Stranger things have happened. Not many, but thanks very much for the call, Leanne.
Thank you.
We're here at the Newseum in Washington, D.C. on the Mall. Our guests are Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. Also with us, Laura Leslie, the Capitol Bureau Chief of North Carolina Public Radio, and Brian Howie, publisher of the independent newsletter Howie Politics Indiana at howiepolitics.com. And you're listening to an election news special from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Kevin's with us. Kevin from Muncie, Indiana.
Hello.
Kevin, you're on the air.
I was wondering why Howard Dean was urging all the superdelegates to put their votes in for either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama before all of the states have been able to have the primaries. I think it just solidifies the fact that they're not really trying to represent the people.
Hmm. Howard Dean, Ken Rudin, and his role in this contest here.
Well, we keep talking about this big Democratic name who could somehow unite the party. Howard Dean is not widely respected in Washington. He's seen as somebody who, of course, when he ran for president, he didn't do so well. But he is very popular among and in the states. And obviously, as a party leader, he wants the fighting to stop, and he wants a nominee as soon as possible. But having said that, and in Hillary Clinton's defense, it's still the seventh inning. We never said that the nomination stops on April 22nd or May 6th. It's June 3rd, and that's why we have all these primaries. So while they don't want the fight to go on, it's important for these other states to have their say, just like the early states have their say.
Thanks very much, Kevin.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Gail. Gail with us from Huntersville in North Carolina. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do. It's north of Charlotte.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. I know that a lot of our superdelegates in North Carolina have already come out in support of Barack Obama, and I don't understand that because a lot of the superdelegates are saying that, you know, we need to wait and see what the, you know, how the vote is in the states and see what the population wants. And so coming out ahead, you know, and we're already, you know, sort of saying that North Carolina is going to go for Barack Obama, and we haven't had the election yet. And I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter, and, you know, I don't want the superdelegates to come out. And Mel Watt is one who has declared, you know, that he's a superdelegate going to vote for Barack Obama. But, you know, we haven't voted yet. So,
Well, let's get a response from Laura Leslie. Again, superdelegates, by the way, elected officials and some party officials as well, about 800 of them. The way the Democratic race is working out, the superdelegates will decide. Whoever, neither Senator Obama nor Senator Clinton can win the nomination outright. But anyway, are the superdelegates in North Carolina declared already, Laura?
Well, seven of them have. We've got six that have declared for Obama. We've got one that's declared for Clinton already. But that leaves us, we have a total of 19. So we've got some work yet to do. 13 have not yet announced. So I don't think they're all jumping in behind Obama. You know, they do have the choice between going with the popular vote or going with their own judgment. And I think these are the ones that are going with their own judgment and hoping to give their own candidate a little bit of a boost at a necessary time coming into the primaries. But
and don't forget that many superdelegates endorsed Hillary Clinton in 2007 when she was the overwhelming favorite. Matter of fact, they were talking about her inevitability. So a lot of supers voted for Hillary Clinton or endorsed Hillary Clinton in 2007 well before any votes were taken.
And Brian Howie, what's the situation among superdelegates in Indiana?
Well, we had Andre Carson, the new congressman from Indianapolis, endorse Obama last week. We think that he kind of needed to align. Obama's running very strong in the 7th Congressional District, and he's got a tough primary race here. We've got four congressmen, Pete Visklosky, Barron Hill, Brad Ellsworth, and Joe Donnelly up in the South Bend area that are undeclared right now, and there's a lot of pressure on them. I don't think any of them are going to move until after the primary.
And if there was one issue you said would make a difference in Indiana, would it be the economy, Brian?
Absolutely. We're talking about jobs. We've got a lot of Rust Belt cities, the 6th Congressional District, where the winner gets an extra delegate. We've got a lot of GM plants that have closed in the Muncie, Anderson, Richmond area. So that's going to be very much in play as far as the economy. And I agree with Ken. I think the war, when push comes to shove by next fall, I think it's still going to have an impact on this race.
And one issue that will make the difference in North Carolina, Laura Leslie.
Well, I think the big issue is going to be the economy, and it always is. But the war also, with our large military installations like Fort Bragg and Camp Lejeune, the war is going to be very important, too.
Laura Leslie, thanks very much for being with us here
at the
Newseum. Laura Leslie, the Capitol Bureau Chief from North Carolina Public Radio. Brian Howie, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Brian Howie publishes the independent newsletter Howie Politics Indiana at howiepolitics.com. That's spelled H-O-W-E-Y, by the way. And we'd like to thank him for his time today at the studios of radio station WFBQ in Indianapolis. Ken Rudin, as always, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Neil.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and writes the Political Junkie column, which you can read at npr.org. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting live today from the new Newseum in the Knight Studios, and this is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from UPS, helping companies meet global commitments with time-definite delivery to major destinations. Learn more at ups.com/whiteboard. From Kauffman, the foundation of entrepreneurship, celebrating entrepreneurs who start businesses and change the world. On the web at kauffman.org. And from the Alliance for Climate Protection, whose WE campaign is working to mobilize people to halt global climate change. Details at wecansolveit.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And this is NPR member station WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our technical director. Coming up this afternoon on The World, a singing star from Bollywood and the music of Miles Davis. Jazz purists may scratch their heads, but others think Miles might have enjoyed India's jazz scene. Miles from India and the day's news coming up this afternoon on The World at 3 o'clock Central Time. Coming up next here on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu, news from National Public Radio, and then the closing market report with Todd Gleason. Mike Solo's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, mostly sunny eyes ranging from 64 in northern Illinois near Lake Michigan to 84 in the far south. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, a few showers possible in southwestern Illinois around sunrise, lows ranging from 48 in northern Indiana to 61 in western Illinois. Tomorrow in Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, most numerous from west central through northern Illinois. In Indiana tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny tomorrow, highs ranging from 70 in the north to 82 in the south. In Champaign-Urbana this afternoon, mostly sunny, the high 80. Tonight, partly cloudy, the low 55. Tomorrow, partly sunny with showers and thunderstorms arriving during the afternoon, the high 81. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with occasional showers and thunderstorms, the low 56. The outlook for Friday, mostly cloudy with occasional showers and thunderstorms, the high 78. At 2 o'clock Central Time, 78 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Stay with us now for news from NPR in Washington. That's next.